We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code Spotify for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Perpetual Chess. Before we introduce our illustrious guest, just a quick shout out to our presenting chess education sponsor, Chessable. Of course, they've got tons of courses on openings, middle games, end games, tactics, whatever aspect of your game that you're working on. We recently had Gotham Chess himself on the pod. He probably doesn't need me to plug his Chessable course, but I'm going to nonetheless. He put a lot of work into it, and they've got tons of new stuff coming on the way. I'm excited about Alexei Shirov's Fire on Board being adapted for the Chessable format, all-time classic book. But anyway, there's a link in the show description for Perpetual Chess to some of my all-time favorite Chessable courses, complete with a quick description and rating guidelines. So please check that out if you're interested, along with what else they have that's new. And of course, they also have free courses that you can check out. But our guest, someone who I had the privilege of playing recently in Charlotte, North Carolina. But more importantly, she is a professional chess player. She's a WGM, four-time St. Petersburg women's champion, a commentator, content creator, 52,000 Twitch followers last time I checked, 64,000 YouTube subs, still playing all the time as I personally witnessed. She is also a globetrotter, constantly traveling, tough to keep up with, a polyglot, speaks amazing English and French as well, I am told. And I am excited to welcome WGM Dina Belenkaya to Perpetual Chess. Welcome, Dina.
Thank you so much, Ben. The pleasure is mine.
Yeah, and we should say for people listening, we're actually doing this live on Dina's stream. So we're going to edit out the inevitable stutterings and brain farts that I may have. Dina probably won't. But if anything sounds different, or if we read a live question, that will be why. But I'm excited to try this out and excited to chat with Dina. So, Dina, I wanted to start with Reykjavik. I get serious FOMO whenever Reykjavik rolls around. I had the opportunity to go once in the 2000s, but I haven't been back since. And this year, Dina, the FOMO was especially strong because you and a lot of your friends, prominent streamers like Alexandra Botez, Anna Kromling, Eric Rosen, Simon Williams, I hope I'm not forgetting anyone, were all there and all streaming the event. And to me, that just made it so much more compelling. Now, I know you talked about it a bit in one of your YouTube channels, that it was a last minute decision to head to Reykjavik. But I'd like to get a little more backstory. So Alexandra Botez, sends you a message and says, hey, are you going? And you say, sure, why not? And did you get in touch with the organizers then, or did you just kind of register and show up as anyone else would?
Yeah, it was funny indeed, because I was actually still in Charlotte when Alex messaged me, and I was playing the GM normal one, you know, which was right after the Alta, the one that where we played in for the last round. So I was playing my tournament. It was super rough, and I had a definitely hard time there. And besides, I kind of was like, you know, a bit tilted off chess. And Alex messaged me about this tournament in like a week from the time being. So it wasn't making much sense to me. And in general, it's kind of super like, I mean, obviously the organization and stuff, but then she was insisting, and I decided to give it a look, and I realized that it was quite a strong event. And I think the biggest challenge for me was to make it work like chess wise, just because I was about to finish my 14 classical games grind in a space of 1 week. So it was like, I was like, if I like a week, I will have a week break, and I will have to get back to the board again and play another 9 rounds of classical chess, where I would potentially be doing a lot of social activities, like, you know, like my Twitch streaming. And I should probably, if I go there, the only sense would be to make it into YouTube content. So do recaps. Like, it definitely would mean more and more sleepless nights and, you know, work grind. And like, how professional would that be for me as a chess player, as, you know, as a competitor, to actually do such? How counterproductive would that be for my chess? So that was definitely the biggest biggest question that I had to solve. And I am definitely very much surprised with how the tournament went in the end, but we'll definitely get back to this one. But when it comes to approaching the organizers, to answer your question, it took me some days to reach out, and I definitely should have done it right away, because by the time when I reached to Gunnar, the director of the event, he was pretty surprised with how late it was, but yet he managed to find me a spot, which was very very appreciate, like, I really appreciated that. And it was already after the registration was over, so I think the deadline was like March 15.
Well, a couple follow-ups. Number one, so you decide you're going to play. I got the chance to play you in Charlotte and got a little bit of sort of a behind the curtain view of how it goes when you stream your games. You know, you have a phone standing up on a tripod. You got there a little bit late to our game. I don't know if that had to do with the streaming or resting or intense deep prep. But like, how many of those details do you need to sort out once you decide you're going to play in Reykjavik?
Well, I'm actually definitely lucky with my team overall when it comes to streaming, because for today, we already have everything settled up and we know how things operate. So it's actually very much automatic. Like, I don't even notice it. And I have an amazing team of moderators. One of them is right now in the chat. We mentioned his name. It's Grugan. You can see him right here. So yes, it's definitely a group of people that helps me operate the things. And so they actually run the stream. I also, usually what I take care of is finding the hosts for the event. And once I agree the dates with the host, then I pass the hand directly to my moderator, who puts the hosts together, who prepares the layouts, who makes them get ready for Zoom call and for the stream and for, you know, for all the layouts and all the details. Basically, I just launch the Zoom call and they're all set. And this time in Reykjavik, it was a different experience. It was something that I've never tried before and something I was really looking forward, because it's kind of definitely a step up for me, which was to be integrated into Bota's live streaming, live coverage of the games. It was an idea that Alex suggested to me back in January, when I actually spent the entire month staying and living with Bota's sisters after my chess boxing fight with Andrea.
Right.
And Alex mentioned such sort of corporations that we could potentially give a try as like going to the chess tournaments together and making content together, like streaming and making it even more entertaining. And it turned out to be really amazing because like Alex unfortunately had a rougher tournament than me, and she was playing the like a lot of opponents under 2000, which made her win her games fast, or like in general finish her games fast. Yeah. And I would still continue grinding. Well, in general, like you've seen us playing, like my games are super long. Yeah, my games are usually a minimum 4 hours or 5 hours. So yeah, it would make me continue playing for super long. And then especially when I got to beat title players, I mean, such as Grandmasters, then the only, I lost to all international masters. I beat all grandma. I mean, yeah. Almost all Grandmasters. One escape for me. I beat Grandmasters in Reykjavik. So it would like Alex would finish her games fast, but I would still continue playing and people would enjoy watching it. You know, like I'm definitely not the the most regular guest on Buddha's Live, but still watching me like woman grandmaster compete with grandmasters and having like Hammer, another grandmaster, commentating was definitely something new for like a new format for them as well in a way. And it was giving more variety for me. It was giving more exposure, and overall it was like an amazing collaboration.
Yeah. I didn't watch the Twitch streams much, but I checked out some of your game recaps, and you're a natural at that format. You're pretty funny. And you did have some clips with the aforementioned Jun Ludwig Hammer, who was of course impressed like the rest of us with your game against Kyuski. And, circling back to what you mentioned earlier, Dina, that you had a rough time in Charlotte. So for listeners, there were two tournaments there, the Alto, which is at least 21. I've shouted it out before. I like it as sort of a break from playing all these young monsters, although certainly they deserve their place in the chess world as well. So I had a good time, got to play Dina. It was a well-contested game, but she outplayed me and outcalculated me. In the end, we might talk about that more later. But Dina then stuck around and played an invitational event. And as she mentioned, things didn't go that well. So when I was thinking about asking you to interview you, I was like, well, I don't know if the timing is right, because often when you reach out to a guest after they've had a rough tournament, they don't really want to talk about it, which I totally understand. But I saw that you're playing in Reykjavik as well. So, and we're glad it has a happier ending as you had those two results. But one more question on Reykjavik, or at least one more, Dina, is, so I'm curious, people like yourself and Alexandra Botez and Eric, once you did decide to play, are you asking for conditions? Because I do feel like it really raises the profile of these tournaments. And as a chess fan, which I primarily am, like it makes me much more interested in the tournament. And obviously the legend Ivanchuk was the top seed. Shout out to Niels Grandiose, who won the tournament in impressive fashion. But to me, like having these people that you feel like you have a stake in rooting for really adds to it. So were you worried about conditions, or do you feel like the content benefits that you alluded to are conditions enough?
So overall, in general, streamers do get conditions, obviously, and this is normal. And this is very, very nice from the part of organizers, because it's definitely not the case at other events. When it comes to me, unfortunately, I was signing up for such a late notice that there were no more spots for conditions available, but that wasn't actually even like a question on the spectrum for me, because like I knew it was for something way bigger, and it was more for my, you know, for my long-term career growth. So it didn't matter that much, probably because I've managed to, you know, already to build a kind of like more or less successful overall business, if I can call it so, as the Balinkai or Dina Balinkai, that like such decisions as to jump on this or that trip for last minute, but I know it's beneficial for content, does not require me to be having this side thoughts on like, okay, but what if I don't get the invitation? You know, like, what do I have to cover my expenses on my own? And that's definitely due to the tremendous support of my community on all the platforms that I do content for. And but overall, yes, to answer your question, definitely Reykjavik Open organizers are extremely supportive when it comes to streamers and the invitations. And that's definitely a must thing, as I think of, for the future of chess.
Yeah, I agree. So I hope you make it out there more. I know you're traveling a bunch. Now, let me ask you, Dina, because I know different people approach the game recaps differently. Like some of them just will live stream their thoughts after the game. I know like Ben Feingold does that, for example. And like I said, I didn't catch your streams, but I watched your videos. But I wasn't sure because you had some funny jokes in there. I wasn't sure if they were planned or not. So are your game recaps that you're doing on a tournament like Reykjavik, like are you producing those separately or are those coming from your stream?
Oh, so it's pretty simple. When I play in the game, so I'm on the live of a Twitch channel, either mine or as it was in Reykjavik, Bota's live. And then there is like a host commentating those games. And when I do YouTube recaps, so it's usually like later on in the evening or the next morning when I get back to my hotel room, and then I analyze my game with the engine, like on chess base with Stockfish. I go through the game and I like kind of like understand everything what happens. When I have this clear summary in my head, I set up my camera, my microphone, and I record the game on my laptop, like the analysis of the game on my laptop. And then when my team does the editing, they usually just sometimes they can include the clips. I mean, usually we try to include the clips from the live commentary because it adds more dynamics and it's also very nice to watch, you know, like the complete scene of how it was in action.
Okay. And I see in chat, the original Black Pepper says he's glad Ben Johnson is not in the Discord because what would I think of the messages Dina sent after the games? Uh-oh, Dina. Now, first of all, let me say, I did get to catch her post-mortem. So the way it works is when Dina plays someone, she's got to jet out after the game. So obviously she was polite. She shook my hand, but then she went upstairs to stream her post-mortem. And a friend of mine, Ed, shout out to Ed, grabbed me a few minutes later and said, hey, she's live streaming the postmortem. So obviously, having just lost to a stronger player, I was excited to see her thoughts. So I was able to catch that. And as I told Dina subsequently, like I actually learned from it because I don't know if this is what she said in Discord. I'll ask you in a second. But basically, you were philosophical about the game. I felt like I had decent chances. I had a little bit more attacking prospects than you. But you were basically just like, sooner or later, he's going to mess up. And sure enough, that was true. And I was saying, like, that's instructive to me because obviously, in this case, you're stronger than me. But when I play players lower rated than me, sometimes I try to sort of, if the game is not going the way I want, I get the idea that I'm going to think my way out of it. And in reality, you just have to play decent moves and sooner or later they'll mess up. Hopefully it seems like these days they don't mess up as often as they used to. But anyway, I found that instructive. But if that was not the trash you talked in Discord, Dina, I want you to reveal what you said.
No, obviously not. Usually when I use my Discord for, so first of all, I need to explain that the Discord is like our, like the core group community, people who have been there with us from the very beginning. It's, by the way, now the beginning of April is the official 3 years anniversary of me having started streaming on Twitch. I remember I signed my chess.com partnership contract on April 4, 2020, so it's been 3 years of long grind. And there are definitely a group of people who, by the way, you can see right now in our live chat on Twitch, who have been there from the very beginning, and they kind of like continue this you know, this exchange of like this kind of like, you know, e-friendship, if I can call it so, like and hanging out together in our Discord. And this is a group of people where I can be, you know, my most like natural self. So definitely it comes to those moments when I finish like tough games. Either I miss winning chances and I make a draw, like I was with the third grandmaster who I didn't take a scalp off in Reykjavik, or when I lose, like painful, like just war when I lose. And I know that the community has been following that, and I know as a fact that they know what I'm talking about. And then I'm going to that Discord and I send some very emotional, deep and dark messages that I would never post anywhere. I hope no one makes a screenshot. And even if you do, I would always say that it's Photoshop. So I'm safe there. But when it comes to giving my thoughts after the game on my Twitch channel, and whatever is live, I definitely try to keep it professional and no, like, you know, not being toxic. But on Discord, I can let myself free and be just as toxic as I want to be.
And talk trash about me.
Yes, I can do so. And it's very bad, but I can do so. Yes. Okay. But I mean, I won against you, right, Ben?
Yeah.
So there was no meaning. Yeah, like, I didn't have any negativity inside. I didn't want to talk trash about you. I didn't have that.
Yeah, didn't have to kick me when I'm down. I get it.
Yeah, totally. But when you speak about the philosophical part of me, oh, definitely the game, like the chess game is like the whole life that I live. And I have a whole bunch of emotions, definitely way too much, because sometimes they totally mess up with my brain and make me do worse decisions, especially when I get to, let's say, like converting your advantage or like stuff like that. But it's a lot of learning, but it's mostly a lot of practice. And as far as of today, I've been grinding for soon to be 25, 26 or 24 years of competitive chess. I definitely am a practical player. So when it comes to those conclusions, they come from with just having played so many opponents and knowing like what's the strategy when you play against lower rated player, what's the strategy against when you play against higher rated player. It's definitely not the same case. And like, you know, just keeping up with good moves and like watching your opponent getting lower and lower in time is definitely like a super safe strategy. And when it comes to facing lower rated opponents, they always mess up at some point, unless you mess up first, which would be an accident. And then it would lead to toxic Discord messages.
Okay. And let's bring it back to Reykjavik, Dina. So as you mentioned, you're pretty busy because the tournament, there were more to a game, 2 days in a game rounds than I remembered from the time that I played. And as you mentioned, all the content that you're creating creates additional demand. But I think the reason someone like me feels FOMO and probably a lot of the people watching / listening is because it just seems fun. So I'm curious, Dina, you know, you're seeing your friends, there's chess fans there, I'm sure, that want to say hi to you. Like, I know the Reykjavik Open in particular is famous for like a pub quiz night that they do. They've got a blitz tournament. So do you get to do much socializing, or does all the content creation kind of remove that possibility for you?
It's funny you ask it, and you might be surprised, but I'm not a social person at all when it comes to nothing related to work. And when it comes to like entertainment, I'm not a social person. And during the tournament, I had zero social life, like literally zero. I didn't have time to eat. I didn't have time to sleep. I didn't have enough time to record my recaps. Uh-huh. I didn't have enough time to prepare for my games, but I had a lot of inspiration and motivation, and I was super confident, and I was like super like in the zone. So yeah, again, giving you way too many details that you asked for, but I hope this is what you're here for.
Yeah, for sure. And someone like Simon Williams, who was actually there, this was before he was famous, when I went, I think it was 2006, and we spent, you know, I got to know him a little bit through mutual friends, had some drinks at a pub with him, and I saw some, you know, he's no stranger to the pub, as we know, and I saw some pictures of him socializing. So were you hearing about, like, were people texting you and saying, like, hey, we're going here, but you couldn't make it? Or were you just so sort of in the zone that, like, you know, like, how much socializing was going on beyond what you weren't able to participate in is what I'm asking for anyone interested in going in the future.
There is definitely have been so much of, like, lots and lots of socializing, for sure. I wasn't a part of that because I had other priorities, such as, like, you know, just rest after my 10 hours games of chess and recording recaps. And my mind was all over YouTube, and I could develop the subject more later on, because it's definitely been a turning point for my YouTube grind. But I did like catch up with some chess players, and such as Simon Williams himself in the hotel, because we were all mostly staying in the same hotel, and especially creators. So I did catch up with Simon, but it was always like randomly just going to the dinner when he was still there.
Right.
And same with Alex. We did catch up a couple of times in the beginning, and then things have been so tense, like so insanely, like complete that I could see that even she was like super, super busy. I mean, obviously, it wasn't just my case. We did have a nice night out in the last evening, and that was probably because everything like ended and it was like, you know, we didn't have that pressure to record recaps or prepare for the game. So like both me, Alex, and Simon, we actually did go out to the bar, and Anna Crowling was also there on the last evening. We did play some Blitz for fun, and we also posted some photos. So it was exact the way you described it. But for us, it was only like, it only happened once. And I had zero time to explore Iceland, unfortunately. Well, usually, you know, when it comes to chess tournaments, unless you plan more days in advance when you arrive and you plan more days after the tournaments, it's impossible to catch up with sightseeing or whatever. Like I must have visited every single European country, and I've been to many other places beyond Europe, and I had done zero visiting, zero sightseeing. So it's kind of like, I think, normal when you compete on a high professional level. And now that I also do content at the same time, it just leaves way less time for your priorities.
Okay. And you, this was your first time playing the Reykjavik Open?
Yeah, it was my first time. I've never done it before. And I was actually surprised on how did I miss such a great tournament, such a great occasion. It's definitely a place where I would love to be back. It has an amazingly beautiful playing hall, just insanely beautiful, right in the middle of the water of the ocean. I think it's a bay, but still. And like the building is built on the water, and you can see when you play, you can see the water like from. I mean, you, like those who are listening to us must have seen already my YouTube thumbnails, or will see for sure. I mean, I hope you will see.
We'll link to them. Yeah.
Yes. So you can definitely see the water even from those pictures.
Yeah. And for listeners, if nothing else, hopefully you guys caught Dina's game against Grandmaster Gajewski. I already mentioned it once. She did a great recap of it. So I'll link to that. Be sure to at least play through the moves of that, because amazing game. And as you beat Grandmaster Erdos as well, which brings me to the next topic. So I feel like we've covered Reykjavik sort of from a tourist / content perspective, but coming off a disappointing tournament in Charlotte, then you have this great result where you beat a couple grandmasters. So where are you in your chess? Like, how are you feeling about your game now, Dina?
Well, it's a very good question. It's definitely a very vast one. Like, it would take several ideas to develop the subject for sure. But since you asked, I'm kind of overall, I'm kind of living my second life, my kind of like second career now since the last year, 2022, when I switched to Israel. And it made me a part of the national team, which is so much different from what it was before of my first decades of grinding in under the Russian flag, because you know it's also the question of concurrence. So I had a perfect like environment from one side, but from other side I was always like, you know, in the second league, and now I stepped up to the first league, because in Russia I would be like something like top 30 or so, and in Israel I became like directly like created top 3, and by active basically even like top 2, because the other girl doesn't compete that much. So it's different. We have like we now have the team that gives you extra pressure but also motivation, because we have the coach, we have the trainings, and when it comes to tournaments, like I play a lot of them, and you mentioned like me having a rough tournament and then getting to the another tournaments. Overall, like the way I approach chess is super philosophical. Any game is a lesson is an opportunity to learn, to improve. And just because it's a game, it also depends on so many various things. You will not always perform. And when you look at my rating, it's always have been, you know, like ups and downs, like forever. There's so many factors that affect the way I play. It can be like my physical state. It can be my mental state. It can be my, like, the question of luck. It can be just some, how I would phrase it, like obviously my chest shape as well. And like having played 14 classical games without barely any break and having performed badly in them was also like a warming up for what was to come next, right? But it's sometimes there is a lot about your confidence for sure. And the fact, as in any sport, because chess is a sport for me, is that the ability of being in the zone. So I definitely could feel that I was in the zone in Reykjavik and I was not in Charlotte. So that was affecting things surely. But when I came to Charlotte, I was super rusty because I haven't played chess since January and it was like mid-March. I did do some league games still. I think I did 4 games and I did them super positively. So it's just like so many factors. I feel like you'd better ask like question by question, then it would make more sense. Otherwise, I will just lose you in my thought process.
So I've got to ask your secret coach for what you need to work on.
Yeah, no, secret coach is not going to be revealed. This is something that's a question of a principle.
Yeah, for listeners, after Dina defeated me, I got to have dinner with Dina and Peter Giannatos and Grant Owen and a few other members of the Charlotte Chess Club team. And we tried to get out of her who her secret coach is, but she wouldn't reveal it. So I don't think she's going to reveal it here either.
No. It's like, I can give you a reason why. So I've always competed like professionally among women mostly. And like, it's kind of like the amount of, let's say, coaches, like good, really good coaches on my level is super limited. And it often comes to the fact that many have the same coach. And once they get aware of that, they can totally understand or see or expect better the lines that you could play against them and the or the style that you could approach the game, or simply checking your coach like games in the database and understanding like what you're gonna go for. And it's definitely not the type of the information that I would want to give to my opponents.
Makes sense. But does your coach tell you, like, are there certain things that he or she is harping on that you need to work on?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, for sure. But I can tell you as a fact that I am stealing way too much genius catch-up phrases or like content ideas from my coach. Like, you can see almost like there are so many super fun stuff that I even say in my recaps that come from my coach. And I would so much love to give him a credit because he deserves that. But it's just don't want to, you know, to officially pronounce his name, but that's all. But definitely it's one of my biggest inspirations for my own chess grind is my coach.
Okay. And what sort of tips? I mean, anyone who's worked with a coach, whether it be in chess or another capacity, might have like their voice ringing in their head in certain spots. So what are the little sayings that you find yourself repeating and not being able to credit him with?
I mean, there are so many things. It's just crazily insane how deep it is. But if I were to spot a couple, I would say just play logical, like Dina, play logical. Like he told me before the game with the first grandmaster that I beat, the Gajewski, Greg. So Greg is extremely tactical and sharp. Sometimes he can get overconfident in his lines and gets like and push too much, and that's exactly what happened when Greg played King F7 and then King G6.
Wow.
Yeah,
that floored me. Yeah.
Yeah, it was. I, my dear friend My dear friend, Brandon Jacobson, grandmaster from New York, Columbia University. I also met him in Charlotte, and then we hang out a lot in New York, and he joined me for my streams. That was amazing. So I also have a YouTube video with him. So Brandon sent me this message right after I beat Greg. What drugs was your opponent on? I want to know because... And then when I would beat second grandmaster, Brandon would send me another DM saying, teach me your ways. I'm playing like 1200.
Oh, I thought it was gonna be what drug are you on? Because the first time,
So back to my, so back to my coach, when I was playing the second grandmaster, my coach sent me, like this messages with advice, like, so he's super unconfident. He can take a lot of time and get into time troubles. And sometimes he can go like crazy, and you really need to stay logical, to play logical moves. If you play logical moves, you're going to be fine. And that's exactly what I did. And that's in both cases, it worked perfectly. And same went for the third grandmaster. And then I just, you know, there was this moment with my third, facing my third grandmaster, where I could go for this pattern. Actually, I recorded the recap at 5 a.m. this night, like 4 or 5 a.m. And the video is going to be released in a couple of hours. So you guys better watch that. How my third grandmaster I faced in Reykjavik escaped from me. And it was the same. Like, I saw this pattern. I wanted to go for it. And it was super logical, just like my coach would tell me. But I got hesitated and afraid and then didn't do it. And yeah, missed the win. But yeah.
So that's something you're working on.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's a lot of discipline, like in everything, but especially when it comes to me. But it's a lot of discipline over my brain that I try to master. And you know, when I play my greatest games, it's because I control myself perfectly. And when I fail, it's because I've done just the same mistakes that I would do already before. So it's always about learning how to like step up and stop repeating the same mistakes.
Yeah, I feel like everyone struggles with that. Like no matter your level, it comes down to that. And that sort of super psychological side of OTB chess is what keeps people coming back. Where does that leave you? Like, are you going to have time to study more chess, or for you, does most of the learning come from the competing in the game review? Are you going to be grinding tactics? You seem pretty busy, Dina.
I am busy, but that's also how like I kind of want to be. That's kind of like the life I've always enjoyed. I always enjoyed being busy. So I don't think that being busy or creating content, chess content, can be any excuse of not working on your chess. And for me, working on my chess has always been kind of a challenge. And there would have been moments that I would be more successful with that and less successful with that. Definitely now that I am, as I told you, like experiencing a new chapter in my chess career, playing for the new flag, for the new federation, being a part of a national team, having competed in the Olympiads, I do feel more inspiration and more motivation to work on my chess. That definitely includes like constant daily tactic discipline, which I yet have to master. But again, it's... like, we can't be perfect. And I do have my own chess goals as well. Actually, I never did a WGM norm. All my norms would have been IM norms. And it's been, like, 6 years or even seven, soon to be years. Like, I finished my last IM norm. Right now, I have 4 out of 3 needed. And funny thing, had I made a 1 point out of 2... in the last 2 games of Reykjavik, then I would have taken my fifth, I am Norm. It's super lame to say that because come on, girl, calm down, relax. You already have three. Like it's just an ego thing, you know, but it's a nice thing to see that I continue performing at the level of an I am. And that makes me think that I definitely have no right to quit competitive chess before I step, like do that next step. You know, 2400 is upon the rating barrier that I absolutely want to cross, and I would not forgive myself if I didn't accomplish that as a chess player.
Makes sense. Yeah, it's good to have that motivation. And as you say, getting to play for Israel and play and stuff like the European Team Championship and the Olympiad, I'm sure, is a good motivation as well. Well, Dina, I know that on your content, in addition to your own chess grind, viewers, followers of yours probably ask for chess advice a lot. So let's get it out of the way. What is your stock chess advice when people ask you, like, hey, how do I get better at chess, Dina?
Puzzle rush, my friend.
Oh, interesting.
Rush. A lot of puzzle rush. One move tactic. You know, my biggest weakness, one move tactic. So definitely do better than me. Calculate two moves in advance.
I don't know. Having played you, you can definitely calculate more than two moves in advance. But so do you think that helps your classical game, Puzzle Rush?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It does. Because in the game, like, especially the way I play chess, I do not calculate. Like, I've never been strong with tactics. My brain operates in a strange way. I always think about ideas, concepts, like, but I never think concrete. I never go like into concrete calculating lines. And it's also where like mistakes are waiting for me because I blunder way too much. And well, it also depends on like what's your brain state is, like how well did you sleep? Like if I hadn't had any sleep for the last 3 months because I've been like, you know, grinding nonstop, then definitely I'm not in the best physical shape for my chess competition. But having those tactical patterns coming to you like automatically and seeing things without willing to see them is definitely the zone I am in when I come after like a 1 month of daily puzzle challenges and stuff like that. I think my best result in the Russian High League was when I came after like 1 month of daily puzzle rush tactics. And yeah, that was the year when I qualified for the World Cup. Also, first time ever. It was 2021 summer. And right before I had this Russian High League. And Russian High League is like semifinal for Russian championship. And you get to fight for six spots to be selected to play with such girls as Kostin, you can Gorechkin and others. So and I could see how insanely better I was in that tournament with one or two moves tactics. And I mean, brain and chess brain is just like, once again, it's a sport. It's a muscle. It's like any other muscle. You don't train it, it degrades. You have to constantly daily train it.
So you're doing Puzzle Rush at least a little bit every day, give or take?
I'm supposed to do that. Sometimes I struggle. I think it's like, if I were to give you an example, it's like people who need to keep a diet because they have some weight issues, and there are periods of their lives that they do good. They don't eat anything that is restricted to them, and there are days when they fail. It's somehow my story, but I really, really love the constant struggle with my own self. Like, come on, Dina, you gotta sit down and do it. You have to do it. Okay. I love this pressure.
Nice. But Dina, Puzzle Rush is only a couple years old. Of course, obviously you've been a strong player for a long time now, and you come from the legendary chess mecca of formerly Leningrad, more recently in your life, St. Petersburg, of course, Spassky and Korchnoi and Daimonov, and so many other legends are from there. More recently, Peter Svidler and the FIDE world champion Halifman. And your mom was a chess teacher. So I want to hear a little bit about what your chess learning was like as a girl. Like when you were growing up, you weren't doing Puzzle Rush. So what do you attribute your success to?
When I say puzzle rush, it's a joke form of pointing on the importance of doing tactics, tactical exercises. That has been like the thing I've heard for all my life since like the earliest childhood. Like, solve puzzles. Did you solve puzzles? Dina, did you solve puzzles? Where's your chess puzzle book? Where's your chess puzzle book? Show me. How many puzzles did you solve today? Like, first my mom, then my coach, who actually raised me as a chess player. He's an international master from the same club where my mom works up to today. His name is Andrei Proslov. He was also the coach of Anish Giri, just like me, myself. And
your
basically,
mom was
I started
too,
training.
Right?
Yes, yes.
Okay,
correct.
We'll get back to that. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, surely. So like, I stopped training with my mom, I think, when I was 10, from what she would tell me. So starting from 10 years old, I would always train with this international master. And I, to be honest with you, I don't ever remember my life, in my life, playing a game of chess with my mom. Even though she was like, she's a chess coach. She was the one who initiated me into the game, yeah, who I would travel to my first competition since like I was 5. But yeah, I've always had this, let's say, the guru, yeah, coach. And same, always would be like, just, it's like, yeah, I don't know what to compare. Just, I lived with a constant questions. Like, did you solve tactics? Did you do chess exercises?
That's interesting because, you know, I've interviewed obviously other products of, I mean, for them, it was the Soviet air quotes school of chess, like Yermer Linsky and Mikhail Krasenko, of course, from Moscow. He's from Moscow, not St. Petersburg. But they often describe, they said the reason that there are so many monsters at chess from Russia was not because there's some curriculum, but because, you know, the famed like Palace of Pioneers, where people would just hang out for hours a day with many other strong chess players. There's a coach there, but they said the instruction wasn't necessarily that formal. But you're the first person, Dina, who did tell me, like, we did say do tactics, because the way it's been described to me previously is there was no set curriculum, and it's not that you were being revealed these endgame secrets that Russians are famous for, but you're saying like there was sort of a regimen that people are like, I don't care what book you do, but you're gonna grind some puzzles.
I think I didn't give you enough context. It's like when it comes to what I was like told to do, it would be on my like on my self work time.
Okay.
But obviously, the biggest part of my chess education would always be working with a coach in the group in the chess club, and when we would be there, it would constantly be about solving. Like, about doing endgame exercises, studying, like, basically, watching games of greatest players, yet playing training games, then analyzing them. But if I were to recall my chess lessons in the club, then it would always, like, the brightest flashbacks that I have, it would definitely be playing out the studies. Like, my coach would give me, like, 10 minutes on the clock. I would sit there, like, as a kid, and like think about the position and then go for the playing out, you know, when you play out the, like, it's not like you do not show the solution because it's a study, because in the long term, but you play it. And I remember that I would like to always do well. I love studying, like studying studies.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. Endgame studies, like the positions, just to explain, it's the positions which are artificial, created by people, and why it is always the first to make the move.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how you can know that's a study.
Yeah, and a lot of title players I've interviewed, grandmasters, they swear by them because it's often these what they would call invisible moves. You know, you really sort of grow your creative muscle. And definitely would recommend Kostya Kovutsky's Endgame Studies 101 course on Chessable as a good way to get your feet wet. And then it's like a vast universe of ways to study chess. Now, I want to get a little more sort of Russian Soviet history context from you, Dina, because as I mentioned, I have gotten to interview a lot of Soviet players. I find this stuff fascinating. But so you were there after the Palace of Pioneers no longer existed, although from my understanding, maybe they still existed as sort of community centers. So where was your mom teaching when you were a kid?
So the place where I grew up as a chess player was and still is the place where my mom works up to today. Like right now, she's definitely at work. It's only 1 hour more right now in St. Petersburg. So yeah, it's she's at work now. So it's another chess club, but in St. Petersburg, it's just like we have like I think it must be like 7 or 8 million city. So they're like dozens and dozens of chess clubs, and the club where my mom works, where I grew up, where Anish was also taking classes, it's like one of the biggest. It's not like the most well known as Chigorin Chess Club or the House of Pioneers, as you say, Anishkov Dvorets, if this is like
Right.
you remember. Yeah, so these two are like the historical because they're right in the city center, but we are like in like on the north of the city. So it's another club. Definitely some of the people watching this or hearing this podcast would love me to pronounce it. So I will go with it used to be known as Dush 2, and now it got renamed to Shor 2, which basically stands for it used to be like your school of sports. And now it changed to Olympic School of Sports. And it used to be only for until 18 to youth. Sorry, I keep mispronouncing this word. But so nowadays it's extended to whenever you have the achievements, like for instance, I do, where I've been the multiple adults champion of my city. Like I'm a part of the city national team. Yeah, because you know we have all these greats like Russian national team, but also like national team, but also like city, like by the zones, you know. And so it's like this is the club where she works until today. This is the club where I grew up. This is the club where Anish was taking classes, and it's basically like an institution because we have a bunch of different sports sections, by the way, just like in the place you mentioned, which it's not just chess. We have ping pong, we have some martial arts, we have some running, stuff like that. And it's all, you know, like when it comes to Russia, all this institutions are subsidized by the government. So for instance, my mom as a chess coach, she's a government worker. She has this constant salary that doesn't affect, like she's not getting affected by whatsoever because it comes from the government money. But that being said, it's a very sensitive topic nowadays, for the obvious reasons.
Yeah, of course. Well, I want to hear a little more about little Anish. So do you remember him? You guys are pretty close in age. Do you remember him? Before, obviously he moved to Japan at, so he was only in St. Petersburg for a few years, but do you remember him from the classes?
He wasn't in St. Petersburg for a few years. He was born and raised in St.
Right, but in
Petersburg.
his chess years, sorry. Like, I
And
mean,
in his chess years, the same until he moved to Netherlands. So his storyline is like he grew up like in the kind of the same neighborhood where I come from and when like our club is. That's the reason why he went to this club. And when he was like 7, he went to the school to the first time, and he got this classmate who was into chess and already going to my mom sections, and he was like, "Hey, I do this chess there, and I really like it. You should join me." And he joined, and this is how he ended up like being in the group of my mom's students. And then my mom right away saw how tremendous was his talent and kind of started supporting him through his way. And his parents are like both met, I believe, in the university, like Peter the Great, St. Petersburg University, the same university that I graduated from later on. And like his father is from Nepal, but mom is from St. Petersburg. She's Russian, so this is where they met. And Anish's father studied like geology, I believe, and he just couldn't find like job in St. Petersburg. He would keep having this like short-term contracts in Japan because of the field that he was studying. So I think it was something with the water, like you know when the water, I don't know the name, but it comes and goes back. So it was like Japan was the right country, and that's when they would have these trips all over, like every time, like 1 year in Japan, 1 year back in St. Petersburg, because of the contracts that would finish. So yes, Anish, when growing up as a chess player, he would spend 1 year like studying chess, and then spending the another year completely being off chess because in Japan there is just no chess at all. But my coach, like the same I was talking to you about, Andrei Praslov, the IM, he would give him a lot of books. And then Anish would come back having read all the books and having like play one tournament and then gain 200 rating points. And that would be always the same thing. And then there was a moment which was kind of, I believe, rough for his career, because at first when he was like showing so many results, but yet like it was kind of like a side thing, chess, his parents were more insistent on him going to school and doing an education, as any chess parents who never been to chess do not really understand the potential behind the chess, when like even if they are told that their kid has an enormous talent. So they wouldn't really support him having days off from school playing the tournaments. And then it would be my mom who would have to secretly call Anish's grandmother and tell her, yes, you need to bring your grandson to this tournament. I will be here. I will, like, you need to play there at this hour for like this date. And they would bring him and he would like do greatly in that. And Anish was enjoying it. So he definitely wanted to continue this journey. And then again, it came to this point where Anish's father got another job offer with the same field that he was studying, he was doing the engineering in already in the Netherlands, again, another country that, you know, this water things are making definitely more sense. So, and that's where they moved, and that's where the contract was like more long term for his parents, and that's what made him stay. And obviously, again, just as me, you know, like having like living my second life as a chess player in Israel, as a part of national team in Israel, I believe it was the same. It was the same for Anish when he entered the Dutch Chess Federation. Is that they immediately saw the potential and the importance of such a high level player, which I feel myself in Israel right now, and I didn't have the same attitude in Russia, simply because there's just too many of us. There are too many great players in Russia. And like when Anish was growing up, such players as Sanan Sugirov and Vladimir Belous would just be a bit higher rated, but also more having achieved more simply because they have started studying chess earlier. So they would already be like grandmaster. They would be the part of the Russian youth national team and not Anish, simply because it's just like there were so many of them, too many. Yeah. It was funny. I remember probably the last detail I gotta tell you on this one. I remember my uncle was so, because I mean, obviously my uncle also played chess and my cousins did. So my uncle and my cousin entered me on the stream the other day. I mean, just to give you a context, like when you're in chess, just your basic level is 2000, you're an amateur, you never done chess. So that's case of my family. So connecting this to Anish, I probably must have lost you, but I'm almost there.
I'm here.
My uncle told me, I remember when I must have been like 10 or so, my uncle told me, tomorrow I'm creating a website and I'm calling it Anish Giri, and I'm buying this domain because Anish is going to be the world champion, and when he becomes one, I'll become rich because of having owned this domain. Right of that website.
Wow. And Anish, of course, in addition to coming very close, and maybe, you know, I know he's still working to get there as world champion, but obviously done quite well for himself. He's also a Twitter legend. Was he funny as a little kid?
Oh, totally. Oh my gosh, he was so hilarious. But also, okay, me and Anish, we had a very rough time when we were kids. Like, we were kind of like growing up a lot together with all the chess field, but we would constantly be competing. I obviously was so jealous that my mom and my coach both like were so hyped about him. And like, I was just like, you know, a side actress. And I think I made this tweet when Anish finally won Tata Steel. It's like, it was funny. It was something like, finally my mom, my mom is happier than the day I was born. This was the tweet I came up with, this year. So, like when we were growing up, we were competing a lot in some small, completely childish things. Like I remember we would do like, and you would say, okay, let's compare our handwritings, who has a more like cleanest like handwriting, and then they would write roads. I remember it was Markovka, which is like a carrot, and I remember like I have up to today, like we were maybe 7 or 8, and like I remember how he wrote this carrot in Russian and how much it was prettier than mine. I was so pissed off. And then I remember like how much, like, for instance, I love dogs. And I would what I would do in the training camps in the summer, training camps, is that I would go steal food from the kitchen, from the canteen, and then give it to dogs. And Anish would always criticize me for that. He would always laugh at me and say, like, stop doing your peasant peasant like things. And he would always be afraid of dogs, so he would always look at me super arrogantly for doing that. And I have so many more stories of that kind of thing, but yeah, a lot of memories definitely.
That's funny. Yeah, I think I saw an interview with him where he said he's not that into pets. I'm guessing with your current schedule, you don't have any pets yourself.
Actually, my mom has quite some. We used to have two dogs and one cat. Now she has only one dog, and it's also like kind of old, so might pass out soon. But we've always had like pets. I do not have them right now in France. Obviously, you kind of need the older generation to be taking care of the pets. Even though when we got our first dog, it was like I was 14 and I told my mom, listen, I travel all the time and you're alone, so I don't want you to be alone. I want you to have someone like to give you a company. So let's take a dog, and it's gonna be my dog, and I'm gonna take care of that. I'm gonna like walk her out and clean out after her. But obviously, it was my mom's dog.
Gotcha. And I had one more question sort of on your upbringing and your chess development, because Dina, you've described yourself as a late bloomer in chess, but it sounds like you had so much infrastructure around you, obviously being the daughter of a chess coach and having so many chess compatriots to hang out with and so many legends living in St. Petersburg. So I'm curious, do you think that you were really a late bloomer, or is it more what you were describing in that there were just so many strong players that you were a little under the radar?
It's a very good question, because it's definitely the thing that I've always had in my mind. But right now, after having turned into chess content creator and having started like traveling around and seeing this new chess perspectives as like the chess scene in France or the chess scene in the United States, I realize how strong I am and how wrong that statement could have been. And it definitely must have been the context, just because there were so many of us that I would like, my only medal that I won at Russian Youth Championships was already junior under 20, and I finished third. But when you take any other European country or United States and you see, as I did now in Israel, like I'm immediately top two. And I think it's just a matter of a context, and also it's just way too relative, as we heard some people say, like, it doesn't matter what's your chess level, there are always going to be people who are going to be stronger than you, right? So it's also relative. So the fact that I would describe myself as a late bloomer is definitely a relative thing, and related to specifically the context of having grown up as a chess player in Russia.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Well, Dina, at least from the Perpetual Chess perspective, moving towards wrapping up, at the end, we'll hit up chat to see if they have any questions. But let me ask you, Dina, what else do you have planned for this year? Do you know what your next tournament is? Any big content projects coming?
I do have a lot of games in the leagues, and these are extremely important to me because this is my professional chess side, and I tend to them a lot. I changed clubs this year for both my Bundesliga German team and my French team, and those are the clubs that I am really like looking forward to. Like, I'm seeing it as a step up for sure. So I've played all six first rounds this year for my German club, and I got 5.5 out of 6, I think. Yeah, my captain messaged me something like, Dina, I draw in the Bundesliga? What's wrong with you? So in April, I have 3 last rounds of this Bundesliga. And in May, I have Israeli League, I have French League, and then again, Israeli League in July. But the biggest tournament that is right now ahead of me is definitely the European Team Championship, which is in November, and that leaves me and my team more time to prepare, as now we have a new coach and we expect to have training camp in May, our first, and hopefully more to come. So this is from my competitive chess side, and the content chess side, I definitely am looking forward to more tournaments together with my dear friend Alex Botas, joining, the content grind of a chess streamer competing LTB. So there might be more open tournaments to come, which we are not like having fixed yet. And when it comes to content, definitely my biggest priority right now is going to be YouTube. And I'm super grateful to this Reykjavik experience because it gave me that important push to dive into more kind of educational chess content, doing recaps of my games. Because it's something that I didn't have enough courage to do before, simply because I come from a more of a chess elitist kind of culture. I'm not used to the fact that I can take over the role and be the chess guru and know all the rights and wrongs and take like the responsibility for presenting like the truth, the ultimate chess truth. And I really see a lot of potential in YouTube right now, definitely more than Twitch for sure. And excuse me for those who are listening to this and watching us live on Twitch, but it's just crazy how YouTube numbers blow up themselves. But just by the grace of algorithm, and I definitely spend the least time of all on working on YouTube, and it's just been the highest, like as you mentioned in the beginning, like you can see the numbers. So that's gonna be the agenda, but definitely continuing to maintain and grow our Twitch community, because like I believe that the Balinkaya community is one of the most caring and supporting, but also super stable. And it's extremely important when you have people who cheer you up this way, and it, as I said, helps you even play better when people watch you compete and root for you.
Yeah, for sure. And I saw iFixFridges in chat say that your recaps are amazing. I want to echo that. I was really impressed with them as well. And Dina, one thing I just remembered that I wanted to ask you is when you are live streaming your OTB games, like obviously it's a bit of additional stress setting it up and stuff. And I'm also curious, like, how aware of you of that are you when you're playing? And do you think it leads to sort of heightened nerves for you?
It's a question that everybody asks me, and the answer is super easy. I don't even notice that there is the camera right there. Sometimes I catch myself with like being in the moment of scratching my nose, and then, oh gosh, I'm in the
Right.
camera. Or like I have this, I do tend to move a lot, like when I sit at the chessboard. And then I just realized that people actually notice that, and they are like making fun of me. So it's kind of like cute how I completely forget about the camera. I think it's just because, once again, it's a question of a habit. I started recording, live streaming my games in last May from French League and German League. So it's been 1 year already of doing the same thing. And also because I'm just natural with camera and I love camera. Like the reason why I enjoy so much what I do right now as a career, like chess content creation, is just because I simply love being on camera. I feel this is like my place. And definitely the fact that there were so many people watching me live, like it was up to 25K watching
Wow.
at Botas live when I was beating the second grandmaster. Just the idea of that, like, gives me so much more courage and motivation to play good chess.
Awesome. Glad to hear it. All right. Well, Dina, I'm going to first of all say to chat, now is the time. If you guys have any questions, we'll take a quick look and try to work a couple in. But while we wait for the lag and wait for the questions to filter in, Dina, do you have anything you'd like to add before we get move in the direction of saying goodbye on what will be the podcast?
Well, listen, my trademark is trash talking. So there is
Okay, yeah,
one thing
let's
that
do
we
it.
didn't discuss that we agreed on discussing, is that did you see that beautiful knight sacrifice and making a perpetual against me in our game. And to give more context, my community actually knows that you guys remember that was the last round of my first tournament in US. That was the Alta tournament, round 5. And I was So did you see that sacrifice?
Yeah. I mean, while we wait for the chat to filter in, I will say I did, as I said, I caught your postmortem, and it was funny because Dina had a funny joke because there was a line. So from my perspective, the engine turned out not to really agree. I thought I was really pushing in the game. It turned out the engine was kind of yawning the whole time. But there was a position where Dina, she says she's not a great calculator, but she saw a pretty advanced line where it would lead to a repetition of position. So she was joking, she can't give a perpetual to Mr. Perpetual, to myself, which is funny, but I didn't see that line. It was one of those things where I wasn't even looking at the first move, so I didn't go down that line. I was looking at other alternatives. But as I said, you say you're not as concrete as some other players, but for me, from my like 2100 or whatever, now my FIDE is like in the dungeon, so even lower. But from my perspective, you're more concrete than me. So that tells me that that's something that I personally need to work on. But anyway, it was funny.
Yeah, no, it's definitely funny thing to be on the podcast with you after having played an actual classical game with you. I definitely think that's sort of a unique situation, and especially it comes like right after the game. So it's definitely a lot of fun context here being on this podcast with you, hanging out together.
Yeah, that's why I didn't beat you.
Yeah, you know, I would refuse. Oh, for sure, I would refuse. Right. Have you beaten me? I would refuse your invitation 100%.
Of course. All right. Well, we're checking out the Twitch questions. I'm not seeing too many. Someone's verifying that you're based in France, which I know to be true. But so do you mind saying, like, are you based in Paris? Are you a city or a suburbs person?
I'm in the suburbs as of now, but I'm planning to move closer to the city because it's definitely going to be easier to operate. And now that I have my sponsor Immortal Game right in the middle of the of Paris with their studio, and the studio is going to be ready very soon, so I will need to join like their actual studio more often. And yeah, for various reasons, it's definitely going to be the next step up. But I'm not that far either, and definitely Paris is one of the cities where I enjoy living the most for various reasons. And it's definitely super easy with the connections because I travel all the time. And you know, when you're like in the core, in the city, in the center of Europe, it makes things so much easier, especially nowadays. Like when, had I stayed in Russia, like for any reason, it would be almost impossible to travel nowadays because of everything which is going on.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. And we do have a couple questions coming in. One of them was, if you had children, Dina, would you encourage them to play chess?
Oh, that wouldn't be even a choice. That would be a must. I mean, just as for me, I was never asked, Dina, do you want to play chess? It was like eating or drinking or breathing. It was the same studying chess. It was only when I got like maybe 15 that I realized, oh, I actually play competitive chess and I actually like that. Maybe I should do something for it. Maybe I should like try to do some efforts for my own. But yeah, for my children, it's definitely gonna be like a must.
Okay. And one more question. This one's from me. I forgot to ask you earlier, but I mean, obviously we have a lot of tournament players and there's more and more people getting into tournaments. And you, even though it was your first time at Reykjavik, obviously you're quite well traveled, Dina. So if someone were to do one sort of chess vacation in one of these big open tournaments, do you have a recommendation? I don't know how many you've played aside from Reykjavik.
Yeah, there was one more that could definitely compare to it, but unfortunately it's no longer existing. It's Gibraltar. I think right. It's kind of the same vibe. Absolutely amazing location and so many more interesting sites and things to do. And Gibraltar, there is only one game per day. Yeah, so it makes also things easier. It's important. Yeah, funny. Alex told me like last day, okay, Dina, I do want to do more tournaments together with you, but please no more double rounds.
Yeah, it's too much. It really is.
It's definitely the American thing, and I can understand that because people have to work in America and blah blah blah. But you know, we also need to save our energy and health and not get into 10 hours of playing chess per day grind.
Yeah, I agree. Have you played Sunway Citrus in Spain?
Thank you for the recommendation. That's definitely
number one on my list. I haven't played, but it looks amazing.
I just remember that I got a WhatsApp message from the organizer that I didn't respond to. Thank you, Ben.
Oh,
It's definitely the place that I want to check out.
Excellent. Well, glad to hear it, Dina. It's been a lot of fun, hearing your story. And again, I forgive you for defeating me. So I think listeners know, but check out Dina's YouTube channel. You're the Belenkaya across platforms, right?
It's now Dina Belenkaya on YouTube.
Okay. So Dina Belenkaya on YouTube. And to those of you watching on Twitch, thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed this interview, be sure to go through my huge catalog of back interviews. You know, not everyone that I interview is Dina, but we do the best we can. All right. Thanks, Dina. Anything else before we say goodbyes and wrap up this podcast/stream?
Well, Ben, I'm looking forward for you taking that revenge, if you dare.
Yep, I better hit the books then. But yeah, sounds good to me.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.